Hello, and welcome to our latest Family Office Solutions podcast, where we explore the evolving landscape of wealth management, innovation, and strategic partnerships. I'm your host, Mark Tepsick, Family Office Design and Governance Strategist for Family Office Solutions. In today's episode, in honor of Cybersecurity Awareness Month, we're focusing on cybersecurity, a critical area for family offices where implementing best practices isn't just smart, it's essential. I am joined by Sarah Rosen, Managing Director and Head of Strategic Partnerships at Black Cloak, a security and privacy firm within our UBS professional network who protects ultra-high net worth individuals, families, and corporate executives from cyber threats. While these providers are not affiliated with UBS and we do not endorse or recommend them, we've chosen them for their ability to offer services that align with the high standards our clients expect. Sarah, thank you for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, so let's dive in. Cybersecurity. So this is clearly an increasing threat landscape for our family offices. You know, the Deloitte 2024 Family Office Cybersecurity Report found that 43% of family offices worldwide experienced a cyber attack within the last 12 to 24 months. 25% of those targeted suffered multiple breaches. Additionally, RSM found that 83% of family offices report that cybersecurity is one of the top concerns in operational risk. So, and I can tell you anecdotally from our family offices themselves, come speaking to them every week, you know, this is something that's not necessarily on the back burner. It's something that's very important, and they're really just looking for more resources to help them understand how they can safeguard their families. So what is happening that has resulted in the recent urgency and concern around cybersecurity?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And in many regards, it's good to hear that the clients you're working with are recognizing this as a concern. It's sort of elevated to the point of let's better understand the problem so we can find some solutions. And I think with a family office, they're in a really unique position. So when we think about this landscape for high net worth, high profile individuals in general, I think the business case from the hacker side is clear, right? These are folks, they don't have a ton of security in place because generally it's just within their personal lives, whether it's, you know, personal bank accounts or personal cyber hygiene practices, which I think I will attest to, we are all less vigilant in our personal lives than we probably are in our corporate lives, where there's a little bit of governance in that realm. But when we look at the family office in particular, you've sort of got the dual combination of an entity, right? A firm, an institution, and then the family attached to it. And unlike a corporation, there's a lot less rigor put in place when you think about the basics of exchanging information in many instances. So with a corporation, you've got a team of security folks and everybody is on the same domain, right? So you kind of have a defined space, digital space that you're trying to protect, which is very different than a family office. With most of the family offices we see, there is some sort of central domain, some sort of email address at familyoffice.com or whatever it might be. But the individual family members are on their Gmail accounts, they're on their separate accounts, they're using personal computers. And this is sort of the inconsistency that allows a bad guy to take advantage of. And when we think about what cybercrime is, just sort of wipe away the complexity of this concept of cybersecurity, in a nutshell, what's happening is these bad guys, they are finding information about all of us. Much of it is seemingly innocuous. So yes, they can find passwords on the dark web and other important information, but a lot of what they're gathering about each of us is seemingly innocuous because they're going to try and trick us. They're going to try and trick our devices. They're going to try and trick third parties so that they can ultimately pull off the heist. And I use the word heist very deliberately because I think this gets to the crux of the why now question that you're asking. There is a level of hacker, I call them the Ocean's 11 hacker, because of the level of preparation that they're willing to put into their heist. And so these guys, they see a target and they are willing to invest time and money and resources into that target. And what that might look like in its simplest form is somebody sitting inside your email, studying you and a family member for 6, 8 months, sometimes a year, before they pull off any sort of heist. And knowing that that is the type of bad guy that family offices should be concerned about, not the sort of day-to-day scam that we are all privy to, that we're familiar with in text apps or otherwise, just things that generally we can see through with some level of digital sophistication. These bad guys come so armed when they're ready to pull off whatever crime they're going to commit, usually financial, sometimes reputational. It's almost impossible to see them coming. And so knowing that the basics of cybercrime, what the bad guys are doing and how they're doing it, and the type of bad guy you're dealing with, I think is really important.
Yeah, so good. I mean, you make a great point earlier when you said, you know, it's the domain to be defended is really defined, right, with institutions. But with families, right, if you're a family office, you're emailing the family members, you know, to your point on the Gmail, the AOL email address. And so that, you know, really, I see that being a huge component of their liability, you know, with respect to cybersecurity. So how should a family office team be thinking about cybersecurity? And, you know, what are the components of the program they should be considering and incorporating into both the firm and the family?
Yeah. And within the firm, so as we think about the firm, usually what we're going to find is at least some sort of tech resource. Usually it might be a part-time tech resource that might not be fully dedicated to the firm, but they are able to be accessed. And this individual might have a varying degree of familiarity with cybersecurity specifically and cyber practices. Certainly they'll have a cursory understanding, but I think when you think about protecting the firm, there are very well-established best practices as it relates to sort of, we'll call it corporate. I know this isn't exactly a corporation, governance. And I think understanding what those are and consulting with a cyber expert, whether you're setting up the firm or you're trying to bolster hygiene practices, is really the best approach to make sure the bases are covered. I would say first and foremost, thinking about email and email compromise and ensuring email compromise doesn't happen. And then we're thinking a lot about identity verification as it relates to interaction with the family members, making sure folks who are directing wire transfers or otherwise are in fact the individual that we think they are. And then the next component where Black Cloak is really focused extends to the actual family members themselves. So chances are pretty good that a bad guy is not going to target a family office that has some cybersecurity, but they may target the family members because, you know, if you've got a 14-year-old who's really into gaming, chances are good being able to access information through their accounts or otherwise is probably going to be easier than any sort of formal governance. And so understanding where the risk exists within the family and where the access points are that the bad guys have to try and access the information they're going to use to pull off the heist.
Perfect. So sticking with the family, yes. It sounds like the family office really needs to be aware of the digital lives of their own family members, right, of the family member they serve, in order to assess the level of risk in the family. Can you break down those components a bit of the digital life and, you know, how they should be, how the family office team should really be assessing that or really helping the families kind of understand the risks there?
Yeah. And if we go back to our definition of cybercrime, it's sort of simple to follow the path. So first and foremost is privacy. So data. If you flip privacy on your head, what we're really talking about is a digital footprint. So that digital footprint is all of the information about an individual or the collective family that exists online. And some of it is deliberate. It might be promotions. It might be participation in some sort of charity or otherwise. So it's information that you want to be out in the world. And then others is the seemingly innocuous information that's very much the tools of the trade of a bad guy. If they can't find any digital footprint, if they don't have any information about the family or the family members, they're going to move on to their next target because that is essential for them to do what they do. And so understanding the digital footprint of the family is really important. How much information is out there? What's the nature of that information? And it exists really in two places. One is the traditional internet. There's something called a data broker that you may be aware of. This is one of those firms that if you Google somebody's address and they charge you $1.99 for all of their information, that's a data broker. And then on the flip side, the dark web. We can't remove information from the dark web, but that's where all the breached data ends up. And knowing what is on the dark web, which is something that is completely knowable, Black Cloak can inform our clients about what's out there, and making sure you're monitoring for any new information, that's where the information is bought and sold by bad guys. So knowing what is being bought and sold allows you, through Black Cloak or through your security provider, to put some mechanisms in place to make sure that whatever information exists doesn't become a problem. So digital footprint is number one. And the next is devices. So when we think about devices, whether it be a laptop or a phone, that is where information lives. And we want to make sure bad guys can't get to the information. And so whether it is consumer grade malware, which has some limitations, we recommend enterprise grade malware if it's available to folks, but it is certainly better than nothing. And making sure those devices are protected. Within the devices, you've got the apps, right? You've got your different apps, whether it's your email app or your social media app. And the bad guys, after they get in the device, they definitely want to get into those apps. And so looking about and thinking about how those are secure, whether it be through passwords or multi-factor authentication. And at times, passwords can be overwhelming when you think about all of the logins that all of the family members might have. So our recommendation is to really focus on four types of accounts or apps: social, health, financial, and email. And if you secure to the hilt those four types of accounts, which usually adds up to be about 10 to 12 total logins for a given client, if they have a couple social media and a couple email, then you're really ahead of the game. And then finally, if you think about the whole home, let's say, the home ecosystem, particularly in the age of smart homes, we want to make sure that all of the devices in the home that are generating information, seemingly innocuous, are also protected and can't be accessed. So it can be as significant as a internal camera, right, from a security standpoint, to as basic as an electric self-manned vacuum cleaner that collects the layout of your house. But making sure your Wi-Fi is secure and the router more specifically is secure, it's really important to keeping all of that information generated by all those smart devices protected and out of the hands of bad guys.
Perfect. So let's get even more tangible, right? Let's talk about practices. Let's talk about remedies. So what remedies can family office recommend to their family constituents in order to reduce really their overall risk?
So step one is convincing, in many cases, the family that there is risk. I think on a broad scale, everybody we talk to says, yes, I'm familiar with cybercrime and I'm concerned about it. However, helping them elevate to the level of needing a solution or feeling the acute sort of risk that exists that they need a solution, more often than not, that really results from an incident, whether it's a friend's incident, a friend had $70,000 stolen, right? Or a small incident that doesn't have cause too much harm. A lot of times that will sort of spark people into action. Black Cloak has something we call, we'll put together a threat assessment for our family offices to bring to their principal or other family members. And it helps just quantify in that privacy area how much data is out there. And it also helps to illustrate how the bad guys are using that information. Explaining how cybercrime works often goes a long way in having the family have an appetite to either put in better hygiene, cyber hygiene, the motivation, let's say, to do it, as well as the ability to recognize what could be at stake. So I mentioned the passwords. I think when you think about passwords, password managers, particularly in family offices, are highly, highly recommended, if not absolutely essential. If there is any sharing of information or passwords or accounts, this is simply just the best way to make sure as you're sharing that information that it's staying secure. I mentioned passwords, but I think above and beyond passwords, we really recommend authentication. And so multi-factor authentication is one example of authentication. Oftentimes that looks like a code to your phone. If you've ever signed into an app and it tells a code to your phone, if you can use biometrics instead, so if you have an option between a code being sent or biometrics, the biometrics are always going to be higher level of security. Somebody could steal your phone or your SIM card, and therefore they could steal that sort of passcode that gets sent to you. You also can use an authenticator. So Google has an authenticator. There's something called Authy. And this is the type of system that generates a code, but it resets every 30 seconds, I believe, if you've seen one of those. That's also a really excellent option for keeping those applications secure. Device protection. So I mentioned consumer-grade malware. Consumer-grade malware, good, better than nothing, 100%. But if we go back to that, I'm sorry, 100% recommend, I should finish the sentence, in the absence of any sort of other anti-malware. But if we go back to that Ocean's 11 hacker, that sophisticated type of bad guy that's looking at family offices, we may want to look at something a little bit more sophisticated than traditional malware. And the way traditional malware works, traditional anti-malware works, is it recognizes trends. So if there is a bad guy, if there's a ladder in front of my house with a guy in a black hoodie rattling my window at 2 a.m., chances are pretty good something nefarious is happening. That might be a bad guy, right? And traditional malware works the same way. If this digital instance has the indications that we've seen in the past, let's flag it, and it's probably something bad that we don't want to introduce to the computer. When you think about enterprise malware, it's a bit more sophisticated. So in my instance, there's a guy on a black hoodie on a ladder at 2 a.m. If he were just to put on a yellow hoodie, for example, so the pattern doesn't match, in theory, traditional consumer malware might not catch it, but enterprise malware would, as it's using more. Now, the challenge with enterprise malware is it requires a team of 12 plus individuals to manage the system and otherwise, but given the size of the family office, it's something that's potentially worth considering. And then ID verification is another really important step. In most instances, the family offices we work with do have some sort of non-technical ID verification process, whether it's a code word or a callback process or something connected to major requests, financial or otherwise, verifying the identity. And that's great. We do have deep fakes sort of entering into the system, and a deep fake is going to allow us to, or allow the bad guys, to fake a voice, right? So if your process traditionally has been a voice, a call with a voice sort of confirmation, you may think of more evolved ways to evolve that process around ID verification, but making sure the person is who they say they are, that are making the directives, is super important. I think we've all sort of had that near miss with the emails, which can be terrifying, right? Because they really do, after sitting in somebody's email for a year, when in fact they send you sort of the fake invoice or the fake wire transfer, it is almost impossible to detect the difference between the real and the fake.
All right, perfect. So that is a lot, which brings me to my next question. So, you know, you've mentioned, you know, dozens of things that family office should do, right, to keep themselves more secure in the family. But really, where should they look, right, to help them create really a program, not just a one single practice that's going to help, but really a program that's an overarching, you know, kind of risk reduction framework for cybersecurity? Where should they be looking?
So I think the first step is really in whatever trusted advisors exist. So Mark, yourself and your team are a great example of a trusted advisor where you are not cybersecurity experts, but you know a few, right, that you can direct them to. Now, when we think about governance and programs, there are sort of smaller vendors, let's say, folks who are cybersecurity experts who really understand family office that can help with the design of that governance program if none exists. Those trusted advisors, whether they're financial or otherwise, also hopefully are starting to understand the options that exist for personal cybersecurity, like BlackCloak. We spend a lot of our time educating that circle of trusted advisors, whether it's lawyers, whether it's accountants, whether it's wealth advisors, or even family office sort of staff and otherwise, so that they do have enough information to guide the family in that realm.
All righty. So that's great. I mean, that's very helpful. So before we wrap up, is there really anything else that the folks listening should know or think about when it comes to cybersecurity here?
So I think a rising trend, and we'll see it more in 2026, really has to do with the multi-generations, right? And generational handoffs have always been a component of family offices. But if we look at it from a cybersecurity perspective, I think there's a misperception that the younger generation, so let's say 25 and under, are tech savvy. They are, for sure. They were born and raised tech savvy. But what we're starting to see is they're the opposite of privacy savvy. So when you think about how that technology has played a role in their lives, it's the opposite of private. They've they've seen and learned to put everything online. And so I think thinking about that next generation, educating them around privacy and the importance of privacy, because again, there's no information about the family or the family members, they're not going to be targeted. That is sort of step one. And so really starting to focus in on this concept of privacy with that younger generation is something I think to put on the radar. Certainly it's a secondary tier importance when we think about broader cybersecurity, but I think it's going to be have growing importance here in months to come.
Well, Sarah, I mean, that was great. I mean, it's, you know, certainly a lot of things to consider and ponder, and you gave some tangible, really advice and insight. And, you know, thank you again for sharing to help us better understand the evolving cybersecurity landscape and its impact on our family offices. You know, as we've heard today, the digital lives of family members are really deeply intertwined and with the operational integrity of the family office itself. And of course, protecting both requires proactive planning, some education, and the right partnerships. For our listeners, if you haven't already begun building a cybersecurity framework or revisiting your current protocols, now is really the time, right? And remember, you don't have to do this alone. There are trusted partners like Black Cloak, a provider within our UBS professional network, and your UBS advisors to help guide you through the process. So thank you for tuning into this episode of the Family Office Solutions Podcast. If you have any questions about UBS, Black Cloak, or even our professional network in general, please contact your UBS advisors. Be sure to join us next time as we continue exploring the tools and strategies that empower family offices to thrive across generations. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Sarah.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.